AviationPros.com is the portal website for AMT, Airport Business, and Ground Support Worldwide magazines. Visit daily for breaking news, industry blogs, and insightful articles from our magazine's editorial team. And don't forget to sign up for our publication's daily e-newsletters. It's all at AviationPros.com.
Hello, I'm Joe Petrie, Editor-in-Chief of Airport Business Magazine. I'm here today with a special edition of the Aviation Pros podcast to talk about the impact of the $2 trillion stimulus bill passed by the Senate, which is currently awaiting approval in the House as we are recording this. I caught up with Kevin Burke, President and CEO of Airports Council International of North America, to talk about the bill, the $10 billion allotted to airports, and what's next in this ongoing crisis brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic.
I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to speak with us today. I guess the first question I have for you is, tell me a little bit about your initial takeaway on the $10 billion for airports and how this is going to be used.
Well, very good question, Joe. We had started off 2 weeks ago with a much lower number. I think it was $3.2 billion that we thought we're going to be needing. That number had increased exponentially just about every day. The real need was about $14 billion and probably going up. But we realized that we had to settle upon a number, and we came up with $10 billion. Now, $10 billion in any year is a big ask for any group. But we made a contingent upon, we had a meeting at the White House with the vice president's team and the economic team in the White House. We brought the 11 funneled airport directors. They were all large hub airports that, where the flights were coming into those airports, to talk about the economics of what was about to happen to the airport industry. We've made it very clear to the White House and congressional leaders that if the airline industry was going to get aid during this terrible period, that airports needed to get aid as well, because you can't have one without the other. Now, the airline needs are obviously different than airport needs, but in my view, Joe, you can't have airports without airlines, and you can't have airlines without airports. So all of us were going to be hurting. We have some interesting numbers that would back that up. Passenger volume at our airports is estimated to decrease by, I think it was 73% in March to June, which translates to about a 53% decrease in the first half of 2020. And 37% for the full year compared to forecasted 2020 levels without COVID-19. So that's an enormous drop in our payments. So in absolute terms, in the first half of 2020, our total passenger employment is anticipated to decrease by 244 million passengers and 349 million for the full year. And that's a number, and if you think about it in absolute terms, we do about close to a billion passengers a year in U.S. airports. So that's down from that number. So that's an enormous drop.
Now, what are these payments going to look like, and where can airports expect to see them?
Well, funny you mention that, because I just got off the phone with an airport director who wanted to know, well, now we got this thing done, where do we get the money? It's a process that we're working with the FAA. The FAA, since this is an appropriations matter through the FAA will be in charge of the $10 billion that's there. There's a formula that we're working on with them as to how airports get the money, who gets it based upon their debt to cash ratio, which is still being worked on with our team and the team at the FAA. First of all, they can't really do anything until it's actually technically approved by Congress and signed by the president, but we anticipate that's going to happen. So we'll probably know, and we've asked the FAA to be able to expedite this, because it's not something that can wait 2 to 3 weeks. These are airports that need money, and they need money now. Some have upcoming bond payments beginning of June. And as you might recall, Joe, one of the reasons why we got in this in the first place was the fact that airports, many of them have bonds they have to pay, municipal bonds. An airport has never, ever failed to make a bond payment, and we don't plan on doing it now. And one of the things we pressed with Congress was, what happens if an airport fails to pay its bonds? Who's going to help? Who's going to help out? We convinced them that with the number of employees that are employed at airports and the net effect on the surrounding communities was such that it's not just really a help for airports, but think about all the jobs that have basically gone away with the loss of employment. We want to see people flying, but we also have to pay our bills at the same time and keep a skeleton crew on many of these airports that have to keep the place running, because airlines are still flying. They're just not flying at the same degree they were flying 3 or 4 weeks ago.
All right. And obviously $10 billion is a lot of money, but just from some of the news that's been out there this week, I mean, for example, Port Authority in New York, New Jersey, they need about $2 billion to stabilize their entire operations. And even AOPA, they put out a statement noticing that, you know, $100 million grant program is great, but if you spread that across the 2,800 general aviation airports across the system, that's about 36,000 per airport. So how far is this funding going to get the system? And when are we going to need to do something more to help close the continued gap?
It's my expectation that we're going to have to go back for more. We asked for the first $10 billion. We're going to figure out how to get that out. There are other tranches that I think there's going to be a fourth one, at which we're going to be very active in trying to get money for airports. So this is not over yet. And we're just glad we got the first $10 billion. And we're going to work from there. And then we go from there. And you're right. I mean, there's some airports are going to need a lot more than that. Some are going to do just fine. It's like anything with airports. You've been to one airport, they're all different. And so it's my expectation that we're going to be working the hill pretty hard for more money before we know it.
And obviously that's a pretty big process. Do you anticipate at some point that some of these local communities might have to step in and help shore up some of these finances as well?
Well, it's not against the it's not something that might not happen. That's obviously a decision that would have to be made by those local communities. But when we do the math on the impact of an airport and a local community, in many communities, this is the anchor of the business of those communities. Without the airport, you don't have businesses that are going in there. You don't have a tourism. And the folks in Congress have realized how important airports are to the success of the airlines, and that's why we're included in this package. Now, their economic issues are very different than ours. They have very different financing models, and their financing problems are far more difficult than ours. However, relative to the airlines, you know, if we don't keep up and make changes and have money at our airports, then the airlines are going to have a hard time connecting passengers when this thing begins to fade away. And I hope it fade away sooner than later, but who knows? Viruses don't know boundaries. They don't know when to stop. I think keeping people away from one another has been helpful. And that's one of the things I think at our airports, the fact that our employments are down so much has really helped people from passing along this virus from one to another. But, you know, who knows? But again, the fix on this is going to be very expensive. Mm-hmm. We know that.
And who right now is more exposed financially? Is it the large airports because of the high ongoing operating costs, or the smaller ones that are losing essentially all their air service?
Well, it's a combination of both. I mean, every airport will tell you that when you lose employments, you lose money, and you lose PFC money, for example. They're not getting money for the PFC. To be able to, which stays, as you know, it stays at the airport to be able to help pay those bonds. And one of the things that we talked about early on is when the airlines reduce their flights and we don't have the PFC money coming in, which is used directly for either ongoing projects or paying debt, that hurts our ability to pay that current debt. It also really inhibits us from picking on new projects or continuing ongoing projects that are now in place at airports. And I do know that some airports have put a hold on some of the projects because they're just not the cash flow to be able to handle it. It depends on who you talk with. Some of the smaller airports are devastated because they've lost a ton of employments and they might have lower debt ratios. You have some large and medium airports that have high debt and need to have the help to be able to pay that debt now in their bond payments. So every airport's different depending upon how they finance themselves. But all of them, at some point, Joe, are going to need it.
Now, as you just mentioned, this is likely going to halt a lot of infrastructure investment across the spectrum. And I know ACINA has, you know, documented this. And in 2019, there was a $128 billion backlog. What kind of further exacerbation do you expect to have this on the backlog?
Well, each year we don't get an increase in the PFC, that number is going to go up. It's an outdated number. It's 20 years old. It really should be 850. That would go a long way right now to be able to put the cash in the bank, so airports would have an easier time paying their bonds and paying their personnel. But again, that's all based upon employment. But even if you increase the PFC, which we hope to do sooner than later, that will go a long way over time to modernize airports, to be able to begin or complete projects that will turn our airports into 21st century airports. Because right now, the way, if you asked me 4 weeks ago before this entire process began, we're not on the same parallel tracks with the airlines. The airlines are modernizing their aircraft. They are making a boatload of money. And we have older airports that are trying to keep up with the demands of a larger employment base from the airlines with modern aircraft. So you have modern aircraft and older airports. And we're trying to make the airports modern for a lot of reasons, for obviously the passenger experience, because as you know, all of the revenue at an airport is not just from the airlines, it's not just from employments. It's all what we call our non-aviation revenue. And those are the concessionaires and the restaurants and the stores that are in the airport that have an opportunity to sell the passengers before they get on their planes. They have been hurt by this. And I know they're working with their local airports to see how they're going to get through this. And again, that's an issue that's in between that local airport and the concessionaires. But there's a lot of moving parts in this, and all the financial parts are right now not looking north, they're looking south, but having $10 billion to work with right now is a good start, a very, very good start.
And now, obviously, the airlines, they got a pretty sizable amount of money, too, $32 billion of which was direct grants to support employee wages. Now, they also have some loan guarantees. Now that the dust is settled, at least a little bit, looking at this deal, what impact do you expect to have this at airports and as far as the service that they're having right now?
Impact on airports? Well, you know, the only thing we look at here, Joe, is if the airports, if the airlines remain open for business and they don't go bankrupt, which we hope they don't do, that means we have employment growing at airports. That's good news for airports, because that means revenue. That means not only revenue from landing fees, that revenue from PFCs, but that it's parking revenue, rental car revenue, all sorts of revenue that help pay the bills in an airport. Right now, the discussions we've been having with our large, medium, and small hub airport directors are rental car companies ask for places to park their cars because nobody's renting them and getting some type of revenue for that. Airlines are looking to where they can park aircraft on runways not being used because they don't know where to put their aircraft. Then you have just plain old parking revenue where you have, you know, 1,000 cars in one parking garage one day. I heard one airport director saying we had 100 cars in the garage. That's an enormous drop in revenue. So when this cycle begins to ebb northward in a better direction, the cash flow will obviously improve, but it'll take a while for it to come back. But my guess is that when it does come back, I think it'll come back very strongly, because when you listen to the Fed chair this morning talking about this economy, he said, fundamentally, we have a strong economy, but a strong economy that was impacted negatively by a virus that none of us can control. As a result, the entire economy has come to a grinding halt. So, and obviously transportation, i.e. airports, have paid a big price for that. And that's why I'm really thankful to our members of Congress, in particular, Senator Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire, who led the efforts in the Senate to make sure that airports were included in the Senate legislation, and all of our House colleagues who helped us get the money in the House side. So there was a lot of support in Congress to helping the nation's airports, because we're all local businesses. And in many places, we're the biggest piece of real estate in those congressional districts. So they listen to us.
And now, obviously, there's a lot of heavy-duty airline finance projects that are going on at airports right now. going forward, is there a concern about, you know, with the shaky finances of the airlines right now, that some of these local airports might get caught holding the bag if something happens to one of these airlines or several of them?
Well, we certainly hope not. Obviously, we've been through that before when airports have, when airlines have de-hubbed at airports, and it's not pretty. If you look at Pittsburgh, if you look at Cincinnati, you look at Cleveland, you look at St. Louis, you can see examples of how airports have been negatively impacted when airlines make economic decisions about where they want to fly in and out of. Fortunately, those airports have been able to survive and survive by very, very good management and also adapting to their new environment. Pittsburgh, for example, they don't look at themselves as a hub anymore. Cincinnati, looks at its place. They're making it revenue in cargo rather than just passengers. So they have figured a way to survive. And so long term, I think we're all going to do fine. It's just the short term we have to worry about.
And this bill too, one of the aspects of it is it suspends the airport and airway trust fund excise tax as soon as it's signed through January 1st. Are you concerned about the overall impact this could have on the trust fund as going forward?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because that trust fund is important for airports. And I know this is a temporary solution, but we'll eventually have to go back to normal.
And then the last question I had for you, looking at it, TSA noticed that you marked that we're about down 90% in travelers year over year this week. Harris poll that came out this week said 20% of travelers are going to wait at least 4 months after the end of this COVID crisis before they even consider flying again. What do the airports need to be thinking about right now about for planning for the future once we get out of this?
Well, that's a great question. It's a very complicated answer because every airport is different, but airports want to hold on to their employees as long as they can, or furlough them or whatever they have to do to keep them. But when they come back, they have to be ready for travel. And, you know, I was on the phone with the head of the TSA today. We have a weekly call, the two of us, and we're talking about yesterday or the day before, they had a number of, I think it was 289,000 people had gone through TSA checkpoints. I think it was Tuesday, which is the lowest number they've ever recorded, and it's down tremendously. So I think going forward, Joe, on this, look, airports aren't going to fall apart. They're all safe places. It might slow down their ability to be able to build new infrastructure, but it also will allow them to look about how they plan for this should this ever happen again. It's not something anybody anticipated. Obviously, keeping cash on hand is important, but even that, in a longer period of time, it doesn't last very long. So I think what's going to happen is it will actually put a bigger and brighter light on the need for airport infrastructure and possibly the need for, over time, to look at modernizing the PFC. So airports have more money to be able to deal with rather than having to worry about their capital expenses during a down period.
Excellent. Well, all right. Well, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Okay, Joe, take care now.
Thanks for joining us for today's podcast. For more information about the ongoing COVID-19 crisis, visit aviationpros.com or make sure to sign up for the Airport Business Newsletter. I'm Joe Petrie. Please stay safe out there.